Hi there. We're busy speaking about cross-cultural ministry, and we spoke quite a bit about different foreign cultures and even in some cases primitive cultures in some ways, and how to minister the gospel there. And today I just want to take a little bit of a step back and look at what culture really is. So firstly, think about culture, and we know culture is notoriously difficult to define. In fact, if you go and do a search on the internet, you'll probably find a couple of dozen different definitions for culture. So I just want you to take a couple of minutes and think about what culture is. How would you define culture? What would you say if someone asked you to define culture? Just take a couple of minutes and think about that, or maybe discuss it in groups of two or three if you're in a group setting. Okay, so a culture, like I said, is quite difficult to define, but I found a definition on the internet recently which I quite like and which I think captures quite a few important aspects of what culture is. And it says the following: a culture is a way of life of a group of people, so it's a group dynamic. The behaviors, beliefs, values, and symbols that they accept generally without thinking about them, and that are passed along by communication and imitation from one generation to the next. Okay, so culture is a way of life of a group of people, the behaviors, beliefs, values, and symbols that they accept, generally without thinking about them, and that are passed along by communication and imitation from one generation to the next. Now, firstly, and we'll speak about this a little bit more just now, notice that culture is not a static thing. Culture is a group dynamic which changes when the group changes. So if a group any group inevitably, if they spend enough time together, develop a group culture. So you can have a family culture, you can have a church culture, you can have a national culture, although a homogenous national culture nowadays is very, very rare. But if the group that has developed that culture starts changing significantly, then the culture of that group is also going to change with the group. Okay, so it's a group dynamic. Culture is a group dynamic. And culture is a cumulative deposit that is socially transmitted through language, artifacts. Language obviously carries a lot of meaning and how we do things and how we think about things is carried over in our language. Artifacts that are important cultural artifacts, institutions like marriage, church, government, customs, you know, ways of doing things, and then symbols, you know. And all of these are used, amongst others, to transmit culture from one generation to the next. And then also, notice that culture is usually in the background of our thinking. And I've mentioned this before. Culture is not something that you focus on usually. It's not something that you usually consciously aware of. And what we need to do is take culture from the background of our thinking and move it around to the foreground of our thinking and develop a conscious awareness of it if we want to change it and interact with it. So I often say this about a worldview, and a worldview is obviously an important part of your culture, but that it's like a set of glasses, spectacles. And if I put on the sunglasses, it obviously colors everything I see. But so often, you know, people who wear glasses especially will become so used to the glasses that they wear, the spectacles that they wear, that they're no longer aware of the spectacles there. They see everything that they observe in the world is colored by the spectacles or amplified, magnified by the spectacles. But they become so used to these spectacles that they're no longer aware of them. And it just becomes part of how they see the world. They're not used to seeing the world in any other way. And you can obviously think about a situation where someone forgot their spectacles on their nose, and they're asking, you know, where's my glasses? And it's right there in front of them. And so often with our cultures, it's like that. It's so close to us that we're not really consciously aware of it. And then, just in the context of the rest of the module of cross-cultural ministry, when we do cross-cultural ministry, when we go from our native culture to a foreign culture, all of a sudden, what is in the background for the people to whom that culture is native, it's the norm for them, it's what they're used to. They're not consciously aware of it. But because we come from a different culture, we come into that and we experience it as a foreign culture, everything is new to us. So we acutely aware of their culture because it's so different from our culture. And that actually helps us. That forces us to take that foreign culture, which for the natives is in the background of their thinking. They're not consciously aware of it. And it comes to the foreground of our thinking. And we can observe it much more closely and keenly than natives to that culture can, because it's a foreign culture to us. And then we can look at that culture, we can analyze it, we can look at things like cultural open doors that we spoke about, cultural analogies, analyze the culture, understand the culture, and then use the culture in order to minister the gospel. If you can just think about the analogy of the water and the cup, the water of the gospel that always stays the same, but then the cultural cup, which changes. So we look at this cup and we say, wow, this is a weird cup. You know, I'm from, say, South Africa, and this is an Indian cup, cultural cup. And it's just so radically different from my cultural cup that I'm absolutely fascinated by it. And I see it. But to the Indian person to whom that cup is normal and they know no other cup, they hardly notice the cup, because everyone has a cup like that in his culture. So I can see that culture much more clearly. I can analyze it. I can interact with it much more intentionally. Okay, now here's the thing. Missional living is all about living as though you were a cross-cultural missionary within your own culture. In other words, taking that same skill set that you apply to the culture that is foreign to you and applying it to your own native culture. But you cannot do that unless you become culturally aware, unless you become aware of your culture, unless you move it from the background of your thinking to the foreground of your thinking, unless you move it from the subconscious to the actual conscious awareness and say, okay, just like I can be so aware of that culture that is foreign to me, I can be just as aware of my own native culture. It takes a bit more effort because it's so normal to me, but I can actually. And then I can start seeing opportunities for the gospel in much the same way that I could have seen them in a foreign culture. So it's a sensitization that takes place. And we can do this because ultimately as Christians, even though we're in the world, we are not of this world. Remember, in Philippians 3 verse 20, Paul writes to the church in Philippi and he says, "But our citizenship is in heaven, from where we await a Savior, the Lord Jesus." Our citizenship is in heaven. And just to understand the background of what Paul's writing here is very important. He's writing, what happened was there's this big plain, agricultural plain in Philippi, which is actually called the plain of Philippi, and the town of Philippi, which later became a city, is situated on that plain. And two major battles were fought on this plain. The first by the Romans, and they were both Roman civil wars. The first was between, Brutus and Cassius on the one hand, and Anthony and Octavian, who later became Caesar Augustus on the other hand. And Anthony and Augustus actually won that battle. They defeated Brutus and his army and his allies. And I think about 10 years later, there was another civil war, this time between Anthony and Augustus, Caesar Augustus, and which Caesar Augustus then won. And how the Roman army worked is most of the people in the army were mercenaries. They weren't necessarily citizens of Rome. They were mercenaries, and they got paid with loot and all that kind of stuff. Often the defeated armies would then incorporate into the Roman army and become part of them. And so most of them weren't Roman citizens. They were just this mercenary army fighting for Rome, which was the city-state. And as Gordon Fee explains, Octavian or Caesar Augustus was a very astute politician, and he didn't want all these veterans after this victory he had won coming back, you know, with all the money they got, you know, from the loot and so on, coming back to Rome with no jobs, maybe not even family there, and you know, becoming citizens there, because if you had served your country as a soldier, you became a citizen. There were quite actually a few ways to become a citizen of Rome. Not all people who lived in Rome were Roman citizens. There's a nice example in Acts chapter 22, verse 28, where there's this exchange between Paul and a centurion. And the centurion said, "I paid a large sum of money to buy my citizenship." And Paul says, "I was born a citizen." So you could buy citizenship, you could be born a citizen. If you were a freed slave, you become a citizen. And if you were a retired soldier, you also got citizenship. So all these veterans got citizenship, but you know, Caesar Augustus knew enough to say, "I don't want them anywhere near Rome." So he actually took over this little town of Philippi and he gave it to these veterans, just literally gave it to them. So most of the people living in Philippi were war veterans and had become citizens of Rome, and Philippi was made a Roman colony with these Roman citizens in. And they were very proud of their Roman citizenship, very loyal towards Caesar. And here Paul says to them, you know, "I know you're very proud of your Roman citizenship, but our real citizenship is in heaven. Our real citizenship is not of Rome. Just like my real citizen, even though I'm a South African citizen, naturally my real citizenship is in heaven. I'm a citizen of heaven, first and foremost." And what he was saying to them is, don't pay so much attention to your earthly citizenship as to your heavenly citizenship. And because of that, we as Christians who are citizens of heaven can live as cross-cultural missionaries in our own culture, because our own culture, we're only in a lesser extent really citizens of our own culture. First and foremost, we are citizens of heaven, and it's That's the culture of the kingdom of God that we want to bring. In 1 Peter 1 verse 1, it says, the Apostle Peter says, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. He says that we are elect exiles. John Piper translated, he says, we are the elected rejected. We're rejected by the world, but elected by God. And the NIV says that we are strangers in this world, scattered. He says, strangers in this world, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, and all those places. So on the one hand, we are strangers to this world, strangers in this world, and scattered throughout this world. So we're not of this world, but we're in this world, scattered throughout this world. And therefore, we can actually live. That's the theological grounds for living as cross-cultural missionaries within our own culture. So that means that we can actually observe and analyze our culture in exactly the same way that we could do with a foreign culture. We can use the same cross-cultural skill set that we spoke about in previous sessions that you can use to analyze foreign culture. You can actually use that to analyze and understand your native culture and better engage with your native culture and better present the gospel, more effectively present the gospel in your native culture. In other words, just because the cup that you're drinking the living water of the gospel from is a cup that you're so used to that you hardly even notice it anymore, doesn't mean you shouldn't pay attention to that cup. We should become aware of that cup so we can more effectively engage with it. So, treat your own native culture as though it were a foreign culture. Become more consciously aware of it. Study the culture. In other words, look for trends, mega trends, and then also closer micro trends within the culture. Observe the popular media, for instance. See what kind of movies people are watching. See what kind of shows people are watching on television. See what kind of issues are coming up in public discourse, in the discussion, in the public square. See what's going on in politics. See what's going on in the news. And watch those trends of what's going on and how people interpret it and how people respond to it. And that tells you a lot about your culture. But then those are the mega trends on the big picture. But then closer to home, you know, most of our time we spend in our amongst our families, our friends, and our colleagues at work. And in those groups, study what's going on. Listen to how people speak, even though they speak in a way that you're very comfortable with and that you're so used to that you're in danger of missing what they're actually saying and what they're meaning and what the implications are of what they're saying. Listen carefully, understand your culture, and constantly be on the lookout for opportunities to minister the gospel, opportunities that your culture present. Look out for cultural analogies that we spoke about. Remember the analogy of the peace child that we mentioned in the previous session. Look out for analogies like that in your own culture. Look out for cultural open doors that you can use. And also try and redeem the culture. Don't uncritically accept your culture without taking it and measuring it against the gospel. And it's so easy to do that because our culture is what we're used to. It's the norm. You know, we so often see this happening. Whatever we experience on a regular basis, we accept as normal. So children coming from a dysfunctional family or even an abusive family will accept that as normal because that's all they know. And it can so easily become that way with our culture. That if that's all we know, then we accept that as the norm and we hardly even notice it anymore. And that's one of the reasons why it's actually good and very, very helpful to go on cross-cultural mission trips. So I want to encourage you, even if you're not a missionary, you're not called to be a cross-cultural missionary in that sense of the word, make the effort to, even if it's a short-term trip, to go on a short-term mission trip and experience a different culture, because experiencing that culture and seeing how radically different it is from your culture will help you to notice your own culture and think about your own culture more biblically. Okay, so just to come back to that analogy of the water and the cup. In a a globalizing, high-tech urban culture in which many of us live, even though the water of the gospel always stays the same, the cup is constantly changing. One of the hallmarks of globalization, of the high-tech urban culture that we often, that many of us live in, is that it's changing faster than culture has ever changed before, because there's just so much more communication, so much more connectivity between people. So we cannot think like a previous generation could afford to think, that we know our culture. Because even if we know it today, it's changing so fast that in a couple of years' time, it's a different culture in many ways. And even though it might stay, the change for us, for my generation, might not be that quick, the change for a younger generation will be very, very rapid. And their culture might be very far removed from what my generation's culture is from. So even in our own native cultures, we need to become much more culturally aware and not assume that we have handles on our culture and sort of just become complacent. We need to constantly observe a culture and engage with it. Okay, so the big question here is, because in the next session, we're going to talk a bit about incarnation, because that's the model that Jesus came to demonstrate to us. And we mentioned that in previous sessions as well. How can we incarnate in word and in deed the gospel in such a way that our culture is attracted to it, finds it accessible, and finds it compelling? In other words, to use the analogy of the water and the cup again, how can I, from my cultural cup, how can I drink so deeply of the gospel water from my cultural cup that the world can see my delight and long to have their thirst quenched as well within my culture? So I just want to ask you, give you a question to discuss, just as a starting point of applying this. Think about the area of relationships, marriage. I'm specifically thinking about romantic relationships now. How does your culture engage with romantic relationships? How does your culture view romantic relationships? What are the customs? What are the symbols? What are the norms? What are the ways of thinking? What are the ways of speaking about it in your culture? And how does the Bible on the one hand affirm that and confirm that? And on the other hand, how does the Bible challenge that and counter that in many senses? And how can I use that to actually paint a cultural picture of the gospel? In other words, how can I live out the gospel in my culture within a romantic relationship in such a way that people can look at it and say, wow, I can relate to that, but that's really different, and I actually want that. I want to know more about that. Discuss that for a couple of minutes. Thank you.